irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and I'll be flying solo today. My co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, is focusing on his work as director of the Hazelton Betty Ford Center here in Los Angeles. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to many things that can make our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today is one that I love, which is personal empowerment. And it's getting personal empowerment to withstand some of the pressures of school, home, and the workplace. Now, our guest today, Misha Martineau, is the author of I Am Who I Say I Am, My Discovery Journal. Now, born in Toronto, Canada, and raised in British Columbia, Misha's family moved 11 times throughout her school years. Her tumultuous teen years were the inspiration for the development of the I Am Who I Say I Am programs. Now, in 2003, Misha founded the Martineau Systems, which is a marketing and training company that empowers clients to articulate their unique value propositions through marketing messages and coaching. And in 2015, she formed California Life Solutions, whose mission is to empower individuals to believe in themselves. The company vision is to live in an equal human rights world where all people are valued and championed. And it doesn't get much better than that. Misha, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so very much, Alan. Wonderful to be with you today.
Well, I am so happy to have you on, and I know that I spoke to you some time ago, and we were really focusing on wanting to get you on the show because I loved the message that you project, the message that is for literally all ages. I felt the message, you know, as as someone that's a little older, but I also saw it as something that would be so good for a lot of the teenagers we're working with. So share with us a little bit about your story and what brought you to the point of this particular message.
Thank you. Well, I grew up in Canada, and because of moving 11 times, I got involved in drugs and alcohol. When that last move was made, I went into a junior high, and I thought that I was finally going to be in one school for a length of time to build relationships. And one more time we moved, and when I went into that really large high school, I made a decision to get involved in drugs and alcohol in order to fit in. And of course, that just derailed completely my aspirations to become an attorney and set me on a path of self-destruction. So I would get involved in a career and I would reach the top level and then I would proceed to self-sabotage.
Now, the self-sabotage, how does that equate to the I am who I say I am? Are you suggesting that other people were saying you were something different?
Yes. All my life, people said, all you have to do is believe in yourself. Just think positive. The teachers, when I went from being a straight-A student during all of my younger years to the crashing and burning as a high school student, the teacher said to me, all you have to do is apply yourself. And I always thought, that sounds great. How do you do it? I didn't know how to believe in myself, and I didn't know how to sustain any kind of positive thinking. And so with that abuse of drugs and alcohol, later I had a depression of, or a diagnosis that included depression, and all of these things combined brought me to a place where I started to develop this to help myself. And I am who I say I am is a practice that I work today. So literally, this is something that I am working in my life. And for anyone else, because I do a train the trainer, for others to be able to, in turn, help their constituents or their clients that they're working with, it's very important to first be applying I am who I say I am in their lives. So the power in the modeling, as we know.
Now, Misha, you bring up a great point when you bring up depression. And for all of those out there, Misha and I both live in Orange County, California, which has a reputation of being very affluent. I've heard from many people when we talk about the subject of depression, there becomes this either sometimes verbal and sometimes not so verbal message of, well, how can that be if you live in this incredibly affluent area? And even if it's just living in the United States and compared to other parts of the world, let's talk a little bit about that level of depression where other people might look at it and go, how could you possibly be depressed? You have so much.
Right. So when that kind of feedback is received, the result, of course, is completely shutting down and not wanting to reveal what we're really thinking when we're in that depressive state. There was a researcher in the Department of Nursing Science at University of California, Irvine. And what she said is that I am who I say I am can help with a biologically embedded depression. And how we start with I am who I say I am, the beginning place is the real thought that we're having. When people do what you've just described, there's a tendency for the person to say, you know, I'm fine. You know, that response of trying to find the positive thought. And yet that is not where they're at. So the beginning is to take the real thought and put that on the table to begin to work with.
I think that's a great point. And I know that in going through the book, one of the things that I really liked was that there were a lot of answers. And again, the name of the show is called Answers for the Family. So as I'm going through the book and going, I love this, there are answers and answers to many questions that are the same questions that parents are asking themselves all the time. So if you could share a few of those, and I know one of the questions that comes up a lot, which is, she knows better or he knows better, but why do they keep doing it? So when we're talking with parents and they feel like they have established what the rules are or they've established what is expected of their teen, we get this question that comes back all the time. She knows better or he knows better. Why do they keep doing it?
Wonderful question. And I want to start by answering the earlier question. And you were saying, what are people discovering in I Am Who I Say I Am? Participants discover the answers to these two overarching questions. Who am I and why am I here? So it starts with a concept, a self-concept. Regarding the frustration that parents have, they may tell their teenager, if you post these kinds of pictures, then you're opening yourself up for all kinds of problems. And then when the teen does post the image, the parent is saying, she knows better, why is she doing this? And when the parent, when we work with the parent and look at what their thinking is, which is driving their behavior and their words, they, in fact, are saying to the teen, you always do this thing. We tell you what you should be doing, and you always do this thing. And so there's an affirmation that the parent is making, and it reminds me of being in a session with some teens, and one boy said, I got in trouble with the police once, and now everybody's calling me a bad kid. And then what he discovered is that he was telling himself, I'm a bad kid, I'm a bad kid. So when the parent says, you know better, why are you doing it anyway, you always do it anyway, that then can become a thought that the teen is repeating. So the parent, in a sense, is contributing, you know, and fueling the negative behavior without even being aware of it.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, if you tell them enough times that this is who they are, then they're saying, why not? It you know, I think of a particular time working with a young man, and I go through a series of questions. So this is when we are picking up a young man who was dealing with some drug and alcohol issues, and we're taking him to a specialized program out of state. And I go through these questions asking him, you know, will he promise that he will not do anything to harm himself? Will he promise that he will not do anything to harm others? And as I'm going through this, he looks at me and he rolls his eyes and he said, "You have a file in front of you that I assume is on me." He goes, "If you read it, it says that I lie. Why are you even asking me this?" And I looked at him and I said, "Well, yes, I do have that." I said, "Have you ever lied to me?" He goes, "No." And I said, "Then why would I think that you're going to lie to me if you've never lied to me before?" So I, you know, going with what you're saying, we recognize that if you look at this file and you say he's a liar, and now he goes off to school or to a program and they look at it and say he's a liar, if they approach everything with him as if they cannot believe him, then why should he even try to tell the truth?
That's a great example, and how you would apply "I am who I say I am" to that would be to say to the person, "I am experiencing you as someone who tells the truth." When you phrase it that way, you're giving the person, the boy, the teen, the tool, "I am." When we have a recognition of the power that "I am who I say I am," there is just something phenomenal that happens for kids and individuals, frankly, who don't even take the program. By virtue of the fact that they hear the words, "I am who I say I am," it has an effect. In this particular case, when you use the word, "I am experiencing you as someone who tells the truth," it's reinforcing the power of "I am" because you're modeling that. And it's very powerful. Your work is extraordinary. What you've just described is an incredible interaction and how you're doing that.
Well, I appreciate that. But at the same time, I love how you are rewording that. And to me, that's something that I can take back to my employees and just to change a couple of things that are going to focus more on empowering them in understanding who they are. So thank you for that. Now, another question, and this is something that I get asked by so many people when we're getting ready for the show, but it comes down to what some people refer to as backsliding. There's a lot of different terms that it's used, but what can people do when they say, you know, "I start to do better and then I go back to my old self," and then they immediately fall into this, "What's wrong with me?" because they fell back into it. How can they reword or refocus that to keep from going into these backsliding situations?
Wonderful. I'm going to answer that excellent question in just a moment. I'm going to piggyback on what we were just talking about and then draw the bridge. In the situation where an adult is working to help a teen, it's important to know that there is a powerful difference between telling someone what to think and do and empowering them to think for themselves. Many times, there are so many programs of awareness that will say, that will tell people, do this or do that or think this way or think that way. And it's so important to be empowering people with these specific tools. And I know that's reiterating what we've already spoken about, but it's a very important point, the powerful difference between telling someone what to do and teaching them to think for themselves. And then in the instance where there'll be a new behavior, and then there'll be a belief, such as when people are wanting to get into a healthier lifestyle, it's not uncommon for someone to say, "You know, I start eating right for a week, and then I go right back to my old self again." And it's a good example of the power of self-image. So the self-image, the example for me, because it's all about modeling and using this in my life, there was a time where I was a smoker, and I told people, "I'm trying to quit smoking." Well, trying is obviously a red flag, but the other red flag, or the other thing that was standing in the way, I had a picture of myself as a very sexy smoker, and I wanted to look fabulous, and that was my image of myself. So when I was trying to quit smoking, I saw myself as a smoker. What do smokers do? They smoke. So the first thing that had to change was my image of myself. I started to see myself in social situations where I was looking fabulous without the cigarette, and it was just the way that I was holding my you know, my cup of coffee. And so I changed that picture that I had of myself. And then I systematically, over time, I started to return to the non-smoker that I knew myself to be. And I'd like to say a little bit more about this story, but I want to take a breath and make sure you're okay if I continue.
No, please. Please do, because I think that there's a lot of people out there that are associating this with whatever it is that may be that fits for them. There may be somebody out there that's overweight that's thinking, wow, I can associate the same story to my weight issue versus a cigarette or somebody with marijuana or anything else. So please continue. I think that it is a great story and it has so much value on so many different levels.
Wonderful. So what we're talking about here then, Alan, is we're talking about self-talk. We're also talking about self-image and self-efficacy. Really at the heart of I am who I say I am is self-efficacy, which is my belief in my ability to reach, to have and to reach a goal. And so back to this smoking scenario, there's also a powerful combination of thinking with the image I have of myself, which is visualization, and then the emotion that comes right along with it. And when I was seeing myself, when I would draw in the smoke, I imagined that the smoke was like metal shavings that were bursting against my lungs and that blood was dripping down my lungs. When I had that thought very, very clearly, it made it repulsive to me to continue to smoke. And it was systematically, and I would tell myself that I'm starting to become a non-smoker again. If I said that I'm not smoking anymore, what would I be focused on? If I use the word that I'm not smoking anymore, again, it's triggering back to the fact that I am smoking, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it does. It makes perfect sense. And as you were saying that, I was envisioning, you know, again, how these things can be used in so many different ways. So now if you have somebody that absolutely loves chocolate cake, chocolate cake may now not be made of chocolate anymore. You know, so yes, I see how people from the visualization standpoint, but then you're also saying from the soft, self-talk in the way in which they can word it back to themselves is very important from the standpoint of just being able to not picture yourself as that person.
Right. So I moved into a place of I'm returning to being a non-smoker again. And then I had that visualization. There's also a concept that I have of mental momentum. In my case, I have become more fit as I've aged. And I started to tell myself that. I started to envision that. I lived in Canada. My greatest dream was to come to the land of the palms. And I moved here without knowing anyone. I had an acquaintance and I moved here and I had a vision of myself as someone who became more and more fit as I aged. Interestingly, I had a friend say the other day that she imagined herself as someone who would gain weight as she got older. And so the power in what we're saying and that visualization. But for me, how I've used mental momentum is that when I have a tightening in my abs, I tell myself that I am getting healthier and healthier every day. And the fact that I have the tightening, that sensation, the physical sensation, allows me to say that, and it's absolutely true for me. For example, I had a man in one of the programs, and he said, well, I can't just say that I'm fit and I'm fabulous because I'm not. And so in that sense, there's a place on the elevator. I call it the thought elevator. And sometimes people need to start at the lowest level of the elevator, which is I'm open to becoming fit again. And then I'm starting to become fit again. And I am fit again. And I feel so fabulous to be going out on a date. And so there's a visualization. But the momentum comes from, for me, if I walk one time and I walk a second time and I walk a third time, then I'm on a roll. And I know that to be true for myself. So the answer to the question of how long does it take to form a habit, I am the one who decides how long it takes for me to form, you know, the habit. And I would just conclude that thought to say this. If someone is wanting to exercise, I literally, if I was doing it right now, I would put the phone down and I would walk across the room, walk back to my seat again, and I literally am now starting to walk. So it's not about telling ourselves something that isn't true. Like, that's a big block for a lot of people. They say, oh, it's not just positive thinking. You know, I need to take action. Yes, and taking the action and then the thought, the two things are working together to create the momentum.
I love that. And if you can take that same elevator approach, how would you approach that with something like depression?
Well, it very much applies. I mean, for me, when I have been in the thick of it, I mean, when it's just in the thick of it, when it's like a tornado, for me, I know that I am allowing it to pass. It's important to have these thoughts that are crafted like, imagine an archer, and the archer has that backpack with those arrows, and they pull the arrows out and they pull back, and boom, those arrows are going forward. It's important to have those arrows ready for when they're needed. So when the pit of depression happens and I have found myself in that place, I have the arrow ready for me, and it's, I am allowing it to pass. So having those thoughts readily at hand are very important as part of the self, you know, survival. And it's available 24/7. Comfort is available to me. And so that's been very, very powerful. Also, for people with depression, it's important to be able to say, I feel like a worthless human being, and that I'm not going to be able to accomplish anything today. I feel like everything I'm doing is wrong. Like, there's this whole litany, and it's very important to let the litany out so that then there's a space for me to replace it with the I am who I say I am. And a lot of these concepts, I'm sure your listeners are relating to it, because I am who I say I am is a lot of the concepts that we've embraced in the mainstream, such as the power of intention and attraction and positive thinking. And these now are rolled up into one golden baton of wisdom that is presented in a very innovative, imaginative way because of the images that I use. Some of the images are robots, and it allows people to get on board in a way that is unique and different.
Wow, I love it. You know what? We're going to take a break, but for everybody out there, I want you to stay with us. And if you would like to follow along, you can open up another window if you're at your computer, not those of you driving, but if you're at your computer, at your desk, you can go to IamWhoISayIam.com. You can open up another window. You can follow along. And we're going to take a break, but before I take a break, I just want to share a little bit about what some others are saying about I am who I say I am. For instance, we have, this one reads, the I am who I say I am, my discovery journal, is an innovative approach to engage individuals in the process of positively shaping their minds for relationship and life success. While people of all ages will benefit greatly, I'm especially enthused about empowering our children to avert some of the psychological difficulties that plague many adults. And this is from Dr. Ruth Stafford, clinical psychologist. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with us is Misha Martineau, who is the author of I Am Who I Say I Am. And we're talking about personal empowerment. Now, Misha, one of the topics that has been, it's gotten a lot of attention in the media these days is bullying. What is your approach to bully prevention?
My approach is to arrest the bully within. So, for example, something can be said to me, and then I'm repeating it to myself so many times that it can derail me from setting and achieving significant goals in my life. So, first of all, it's about giving the tools that for individuals to overcome the tyranny of self-doubt and self-criticism. And it's also about giving individuals the tools to be able to set and achieve wonderfully significant goals in their life. And part of that has to do with having a goal and also having a vision. I'm going to interrupt myself, though, and do a little sidebar and come back to that. Yeah. There's a woman, Ana Mendez. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. But she is the founder of the National Association of People Against Bullying. And she's the one who helped me to see that I Am Who I Say I Am is a prevention, because her son Daniel killed himself. And she said what he needed is he needed to have the support as a trauma victim. And it wasn't so simple as taking someone who's being victimized and helping them with this cognitive behavioral modification program. This program would not have helped him, number one, and number two, could have prevented him from getting the help that he needed. So I want to make the very important distinction. So I Am Who I Say I Am helps to prevent bullying by helping the person who would otherwise become a bully to take their energies and to put those towards a positive goal in their life. And I do want to talk about the difference between having and the importance of having a goal and a vision.
And please share that with us.
Okay, great. Well, you know, when I met with Denise Brown, she said that I Am Who I Say I Am, my Discovery Journal, should be in every shelter in the country in terms of domestic violence. And, you know, part of that is really, I have some history with that as well. And if a person has the goal that of getting out of the relationship, but there's no vision of what life will look like out of the relationship, then it's not going to happen. We can have a goal to accomplish something, but if ultimately we don't see ourselves living beyond it, then we're not going to be able to withstand that the pressures of staying where we are. Conversely, if I have a vision of myself in my new life and I'm not taking action towards a practical goal, such as having a plan ready for being able to get out of that situation, then similarly, I'm not going to be able to get where I want to go. So it's the power of a vision and a goal. One additional example is I was just training the trainer at Working Wardrobes, and there is a LEAP 2 program. They have federal monies, and they're taking I Am Who I Say I Am to help 70 women over the next 2 years to transition from incarceration to society. And so they're looking at aligning I Am Who I Say I Am with their existing programs. And that's another point I wanted to come back around to, Alan, when you were giving your example of you were interacting with the young man. You were using the wonderful tools and program that you have. So when there's an organization that has great programs of awareness, I Am Who I Say I Am can be aligned with that. Specifically, these teams are working with women who don't believe that they can make the transition because they'll have a goal of doing their resume, but what they're thinking is, I can't do a resume. I'm not good enough. I don't have the skills. This is never going to happen. And they're working with them not only on their thoughts, but their focal point. So as the women think of themselves going to the salon, you know, having their nails done, and then going on a date, or taking their children, you know, the connection with their children. So in other words, it's what life will be like. It's the vision. And when we hold such a strong vision, like the runner on the track, for track and field, when there's something that we want so strongly because it's a vision and we have the emotion, and a lot of times it's for our family members, we'll just go flying right over all of the obstacles that would otherwise stop us. If we focus on the goal of the resume and we don't think we're good enough for the resume, it's not going to happen. And then one more time, we tell ourselves, this isn't happening. I'm behind. It's not happening. And it's never going to happen. So, and then that brings us back around, final point I'll make, is it brings us back around to there's a powerful difference between telling someone what to think and teaching them to think for themselves. Because on autopilot, and I work with, and therapists work with I Am Who I Say I Am, and it's about saying to someone when they say something to say, that's a powerful belief. And so it's not just, well, you know, telling someone how to respond. And I have another example, but I don't want to talk too much in a row.
But that's okay. But before you go to the other example, because I would like to hear it, first of all, I just want to say thank you. And for everybody out there listening, this is empowerment. This is real empowerment. Think about the as far as like the political things and stuff, they seem to be more focused on wanting to tell people what to do or to be able to make them dependent. What we're talking about here are things that make people independent. This is real empowerment. This is the type of shift that we are making and will continue to make that will help not only us in this generation, but for many generations to come. So thank you, Misha. I love what you're doing.
Well, thank you so very much. And that is correct. This is for the next generation, because there's a lot of talk about we want to leave a better world for our children and for our grandchildren. And I would say that our children will be the ones, perhaps, who have the solutions. And I'm just seeing that with young people. I went and I did a program for the Boys and Girls Club in Laguna Beach. And I was doing a session, and one of their adults, one of the facilitators was there. And at one point I said, I'm not sure if they're getting this. And a girl in the back waved her hand back and forth. And she said, oh, we're getting this, all right. And they said, you know, I am who I say I am, and we should have a newsletter. They grab onto it without even participating in any of the concepts. The I am who I say I am is so powerful. But now here's the example that we're talking about right now, the difference between telling someone what to do and empowering them. Here's the example. 11-year-old girl, and at the Boys and Girls Club, I said, this is geared for teens. They said, could you work with the tweens? Because they have a national Smart Girls program, and it helps those girls with their self-image and their healthy lifestyles, trying to help with the averting all of the diabetes and so forth. So anyway, we were aligning the concepts with that. And one of the girls in one of the sessions, she said, she was upset because she said, my friends are saying bad things about me. Well, it didn't help her when her mom was saying to her, you know, if they say those things about you, they're not really your friends, are they? Because she was telling herself, they are my friends, and they are saying that about me. So in the I Am Who I Say I Am session, on her own, Alan, she drew the conclusion, and she said this. She said, my true friends say good things about me, and they're the ones I listen to. She came up with that on her own. That was her conclusion. It was so powerful.
And for everybody out there, and Misha, I think if you can just touch on that point again, it is so powerful. This is an 11-year-old that is recognizing that a parent who thinks they're doing the right thing, they think when they say, oh, well, then they're not really your friends. Okay, that's the wrong focus. But an 11-year-old, this is our next generation, saw where the focus should be. The focus is on who the true friends are, not who the others aren't. So again, thank you. It's such a great point that is so well presented when you look at it coming from an 11-year-old.
Well, and the bottom line is that when we tell someone what to think and do, it's not something that causes the shift and the change, number one. And number two, I start, I am who I say I am, with insight to self-concept, and I ask, who in your life and where in your life do you hear the words I am? And some of those girls, one girl said, my mom keeps saying I'm fat, and she said, and she's really thin. So there are all of these things that are being said, and in the beginning, as they're learning to listen for I am who I say I am, then they start to hear it everywhere. oh, I'm late. You know, that's one of the common ones. I'm always late. And so there's a power of I am, and there's also a power of we are. And I was just doing a program for students in a master's program in psychology for an organization called Turning Point for Families, and I was at the Chicago School of Psychology. And my topic was managing the fear and anxiety of deportation. And really, a lot of that has to do with people thinking that this is who I am as a Mexican in the United States. At any moment in time, my family member can be taken from me and there's nothing I can do about it. And that's the beginning place. There's nothing I can do about it is the beginning place. Otherwise, we might say, well, you know, there are some things you can do. You can save money to hire an attorney. You can get a power of attorney so your children are taken care of in case something happens. One more time, we're right back to awareness. Awareness is good. Awareness is good about cyberbullying, about smoking cessation or prevention. Awareness is powerful and it's important. And how I am who I say I am helps to deepen the effectiveness and increase the sustainability of those awareness programs. So any and all programs out there where people want to increase the sustainability, these are concepts, and this is a program that you can align with your awareness program to have people walking away, internalizing it, self-actualizing.
You know, as I'm listening to you, one of the things that I was thinking was I'm going to start with I. You know, I was raised in a time in which we were trying to take the focus away from I. And so now as I listen to different people, there may be a speaker, and in my mind I'm thinking they used way too many I messages, and I don't feel like they were really trying to incorporate everybody. In fact, I'll take that example a little further. It was an attorney talking about helping people in the entertainment industry, you know, on how to take care of their rights. But his I messages left me feeling that he wasn't focused on the people that he needed to be focused on. So how do you address that, where we are asking for an I message and it is a very positive I message? How do you answer that point?
It's a second party affirmation. Back to your example with the young man, and where I was saying that you could say to him, I'm experiencing you as someone who does tell the truth. So then you can combine the statements of I am with a context that is really sharing and guiding and elevating the other person. And, you know, another thing is parents will say that there's a certain age where their kids start going sideways. And sideways means that they start misbehaving and so forth. And I would say that in some circumstances, when someone says, I'm not doing that, that is an assertion of the choice that we have along with the consequences that come with it. I see that as a springboard for positive thoughts and positive action, because we have someone who's stating, I am not going to do that. And we know that in some cases, it is important to be able to self-advocate and say that we aren't going to do something. So the bottom line is empowering people with the I am who I say I am, and to come from role modeling, which we may say I for, you know, ourselves, but always to connect it with the tool that will empower that person. So there's a second party affirmation. There's a third party affirmation where you could say in front of another person, you could say to a third person, I'm experiencing him as being someone who tells the truth and is doing a fabulous job. So there you have someone who's bearing witness to it, so you can enroll others in the process. But it's a good point that you're making. It shows that in all of this, it shows there's a bigger picture and there are many pieces that can be added. It is a system, as we might say in the psychological, you know, realm, that it's a system of parents and schools and communities, and it's that broader belief system. So we have individual belief systems and then we have the broader. But I will conclude this point to say that a lot of times leadership will come in and they'll say, these negative things are happening and we need to do this and we need to do that and we need to do that, and people are behind it. And it's more powerful to say that this exists and we are. We are the people who do what we do better than we do. We are moving forward. We are resilient. So bringing the power of the we are into it is also I like informative.
I like that. And what I hear is that even though it is an iMessage, it's a very inclusive iMessage. And that makes a lot of sense. Now, for those that have heard the show, they all know that I was a room dad for my kids. It's something I'm very proud of. As I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, how does this apply to younger kids? Because I'm of the belief that the earlier we can get them started, the better.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And the example that I gave of the tweens, they grab right onto it. When you ask the tween, who in your life and where in your life do you hear the words I am? It springs up all over the place. The parents are not even aware of the things that they're saying. You know, I'm unhappy at my work. I'm late all the time. And so there's just so much affirming that goes on. And sometimes people will say, you know, I'm not good at affirmations. I'm not good at affirmations is an affirmation. You know what I mean? Like, it's all an affirmation. And the question becomes, when are you not thinking? And so really, it's about paying attention to our thoughts. And I would say this to you, Alan. The people who are younger, just as the younger ones are faster and are teaching the older ones how to use a computer, they also are quicker with the internal operating system, which is our thoughts. So it's, in fact, our children will grab onto it faster than we ever could.
I love it. We have a listener question that's coming in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to either email or instant message in these. This one reads, the middle school I teach at is just starting to integrate mindfulness sessions for our students. I would like to recommend your journal. Is it in any other educational settings? And if so, what has been the response to it? And this is from Ben in New Mexico.
Wonderful to hear your question, Ben. Thank you so much. I was just at the Ladera Ranch Middle School here in Ladera Ranch, California, and the same thing. They have programs for mindfulness, and when I went in and I did a session for these teenagers, 13 and 14 years old, they just grabbed right onto it, and they said that, oh, this is like mindfulness. So they're able to connect the dots with all of the other programs of awareness, and it gave them additional tools. And so, for example, there's a thought spiral. Like earlier, I think Alan was asking the question of, you know, when you say that things are going well and then they're not. He was using the term of backsliding. And so when I am who I say I am, there's a tool that you not only have the mindfulness, but having the ability to reverse a negative thought spiral. And that then ties into the power of the breath. So it's everything that these mindful programs are talking about in terms of awareness, and here's how to do these things. And then in I Am Who I Say I Am, they're literally able to craft, like the archer with the arrows, they're able to craft these thoughts and bring in the power of visualization. Then they can imagine themselves taking the time, going off on their own, and being quiet, because there's a powerful difference between telling them about the mindfulness, then they start telling themselves, then they have the visualization. And when I visualize myself as having the fruits of mindfulness, one of the ones that came up at the Ladera Ranch Middle School was we were talking about how, you know, the focus on being kind. There are all these kindness mm-hmm. initiatives. And one of the things is that when I say I am a kind person, the next thing I know, it opens up my vision to see opportunities where I can be kind. In the absence of having the thought, I may be oblivious to it. So it's kind of like the painting on the wall. We've all heard the example. There's a painting on the wall. We walk past it 100 times. Then we say, how did it get there? And somebody says it's been there for 10 years. Well, we're blocking out information. But if I was saying to myself, I am noticing all of the artwork around me, then that's going to open up my vision. So the power of the thought to, in fact, open our vision to where and how I can be kind and opportunities for, you know, mindfulness. I'm so glad you asked that question.
Yes, and thank you, Ben. And we have another listener question. This one reads, I enjoyed the part in the preview on the Answers for the Family site where you say, and this is in quotes, there is a powerful difference between telling a person what to think and teaching them to think for themselves. I so agree and would like to order your book, but I would like to know, is this journal one we write in or just a book to read, or is it both? Also, is it for youth only or is it suitable for adults? I am looking at it for myself and perhaps as a great gift for my family and friends of various ages. And this is from Georgia B. in Louisiana.
Georgia, thank you so much for everything you just said. It's a big picture, and you're absolutely correct. It is both. It is there are stories to read, like the example of me and the smoking, and then there are pages where it'll say, the new me and the old me. The old me said, there's no way I can do it. And the new me said, I am open to doing it. I'm starting to do it. So there's a process that the book facilitates, which is to practice the affirmations, to practice how to bring in the visualization, how to bring in emotion. And so it's very interactive. It is for teens and also for adults. And Alan said earlier in the show, he said, you know, all of this is great for people of all ages when we were talking about it being for teens. And that's true. Every single time I share it with somebody, I gave one to a lady recently for her teen daughter. And she said, this is for everybody. I have people saying to me, you know, this would help me with my depression. So it is for everyone. I have been promoting it as being for teens in order for I Am Who I Say I Am to find its audience and then build out from there. And so that was a strategy. One quick and final thing is, for an older person like me, I Am Who I Say I Am excavates for all of those psychological issues that have been happening for decades. For a teenager, it's like peeling the magnet off of a refrigerator because it hasn't been on there that long, being that negative thought or experience. And my hope, to Alan's point of the young people, is that I Am Who I Say I Am could inoculate young people. And Dr. Stafford said this can help young people avert the psychological issues that have plagued most adults. Georgia, I'm so happy that you're going to have this impact on your family and your friends. Thank you so much.
Yes, Georgia, thank you. And Misha, thank you. We're down to about the last couple of minutes for everybody out there. Again, the book is called I Am Who I Say I Am, which is also the name of her website, if you'd like to go to the website to get any more information. Misha, for those that listen to the show, many of them comment afterwards that they love the part about success stories. It's one of my favorite things. If you could please share one of the success stories that you've been involved with, you know, I think that that would be one of the things that we would love to hear.
Great. And by the way, for your audience, if you are purchasing the book today, you can use the promotional code ANSWERS, and that will give you a 10% off. And with respect to the success story, I went to the Boys and Girls Club. I asked the kids, what would you like to be, you know, when you grow up, so to speak? And one boy said, I'd like to be a rapper. And then he settled down and he said, I'd like to be a doctor, but I am not good at math or science. He flipped the thought, rode the thought elevator. I'm starting, you know, to learn math and science. I'm open. I'm good. I'm great. I'm so proud of myself. And a year later, he was studying architecture. So not necessarily the doctor, but architecture, drawing upon that skill set and that belief, the efficacy, self-efficacy, my belief in my capabilities, and that's what determines what people will reach for. You can have self-esteem, you can have self-confidence, but self-efficacy really affects the trajectory of our lives.
Well, Misha, thank you so much. I feel better. I hope that you as an audience are out there feeling better. And again, get the book, I Am Who I Say I Am. So, Misha, thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
All right. And for everybody out there, next week is Memorial Day. And both Dr. Matt and I will be taking a break to spend that long weekend with our families. But we encourage you to tune in as we will be replaying one of our most popular shows with guest Don Bauer, author of Identifying and Correcting Parenting Styles That Damage a Student's Development. And please share our show with your family and friends. Show them how they can visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. And again, I said it was Memorial Day. That's a great time to subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And remember that you can do something nice for someone every day. And if you do it in front of your children, you are modeling behavior for their present and their future. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.